good morning and welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 80. Hooray, another round number. I always like those. And it's a beautiful, rainy Chicago spring morning at the moment. I woke up this morning to not torrential downpour, but quite a bit of water coming down out of the sky. It seems to have calmed down now. And I actually did go out and about and wander around. The leaves are coming out on the trees now. That's something that's pretty exciting, and I look forward to that. And, of course, now is allergy season. Now is going to be the time when I start getting reactions to things, and it's sort of unpredictable what's going to happen. One of the things that's happened, I'm not really sure if it has anything to do with the allergies and, you know, me rubbing my eyes or whatever, but I seem to have incurred a conjunctival hemorrhage. And for those of you who are not aware of what that is a red spot that appears in your eye, in the eyeball itself, actually in the conjunctiva, which is sort of on the outside of the eye. And it causes a big red spot, which then kind of slowly disperses. And I've never been prone to these. I think that this may be maybe my second one that I've ever had. It's really annoying, and it is kind of ugly to look at, but it, you know, these are things that are pretty harmless overall. And I guess it just reminds me that I really need to go to an ophthalmologist and talk about my eyesight, because my eyesight has been changing over the last few years. And I think I first started noticing this back about, I'd say about 2003 or 2004. And really just haven't had anything, you know, to do about it. I find that my eyes get tired a lot now. I find that, especially after working all day, that I have trouble seeing things that are relatively far away. And I do kind of try to do eye exercises at work and also when I'm walking. I noticed that my eyesight was fine when I was out on vacation, when I was actually hiking. And the only time I had problems was if something was in the very far distance, it would be just a little bit blurry. And I think it's just, honestly, I think it's just a sign of getting older. You know, now that I'm in my late 40s, it is sort of the time when you do kind of see everybody around you starting to wear reading glasses or whatever. Maybe that's what I need. Maybe I need glasses. I feel like I'm really lucky that I've avoided the glasses thing for so long, because most everybody in my family wears glasses. I think I'm the only one who doesn't wear glasses at all. And my sister, I think she only uses glasses for reading or driving. But I've never needed them at all, and so I've kind of felt lucky. So now I think that it's time. I think it's time now to go to the ophthalmologist and see what's going on. The problem, of course, is the insurance, is the, you know, finding an ophthalmologist that'll actually accept my insurance that I have through work, which is not all that good. That's better than no insurance at all, though. So anyway, that I guess that's kind of on my to-do list of things that I need to get accomplished sometime soon. But the other thing I need to get done, and this is probably even more important, is I need to get my taxes done. And I've been having kind of a problem, because the people who administer the unemployment benefits, as those of you who maybe have not listened to the show before, I was unemployed for 3 months last year and the beginning of this year, the beginning of October through the middle of January. And during that time, I was receiving unemployment. Actually, I started receiving unemployment at the very, very end of November. And the reason why that was because the unemployment people messed up on my address. And they were sending things to the address, and it wasn't getting to me because they, this is very stupidly, just wrote, you know, apartment 2. Well, every apartment on the second floor of the building is apartment 2. It's 2A, 2B, etc. And my apartment is 2D, which makes it kind of hard to move around. But the interesting thing is that, you know, I called them. I actually, you know, called them because I hadn't received the paperwork, and it actually delayed me starting to get my benefits. And they fixed it. They actually fixed the problem, and then I was getting everything, and it was addressed properly. And then after I got off unemployment, all of a sudden it's wrong again. And when they sent out my 1099 for my taxes, I never got it. because they had addressed it wrong. So I had to call them last week, and you know, of course, dealing with the unemployment agency has, I have to say, you know, they haven't been all that bad. They haven't been bad to deal with. They've been, you know, pretty friendly, pretty competent most of the time. And I can't say it's been a pleasure to deal with them, but it hasn't been so bad. It's not like the post office. I don't know if anybody has had similar post office experiences to me, but the people they hire at the post offices generally are just idiots. I mean, that just seems to be the case. I'm willing to bet that the carriers who are actually out on the street, you know, delivering the mail, I think they're probably fine. It's the people who actually work behind the counter at the post office who are the idiots. And maybe it's because they can't go out and, you know, they're not smart enough to go out. And I'm sure that the hiring practice for the post office is, you know, when you get hired, they give you an IQ test. And if you score too low on the IQ test, they make you a supervisor. I'm pretty sure that's the way it works. Anyway, so they do seem to have fixed the address problem now, but I still don't have my 1099, and therefore I still can't do my taxes. So when I get that, I'll be able to do them, but that is due in 2 weeks, so hopefully I'll be able to get that soon. I always do file my taxes as late as possible, and part of that is to avoid the rush, but also I got used to this idea back when I was in school. Because during that time when I was in school, I didn't have a job. I didn't have any income that was coming from wages. So I would end up paying tax to the government every year for capital gains and, you know, the investment income that I'd gotten over that period of time. And it's usually not, you know, huge amount of money, but I went in, yeah, I knew I was going to pay. I knew I was going to end up having to give the government some money. And so I got used to just kind of filing my taxes at the very beginning of April. And that's kind of what I've done ever since. Even though I'm getting money back now. I guess if I were really hurting for the cash, in a huge way to get it back, I don't usually get very much back. So it's not, you know, we're not talking thousands of dollars or generally speaking, even hundreds of dollars. So anyway. Just another reminder here that the live show will be beginning on April 24th at 10 a.m. Central Time, which is 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time here in the States, and 4 to 5 p.m. over in the UK Greenwich Mean Time. So I would love to have people call in. You can listen to the show live at unitedkingdomradio.co.uk, and you can Skype in using the Skype address United Kingdom Radio. So a couple episodes ago, I was talking with Trucker Tom, and I was talking with Scott. And we do have another comment from Scott here for a little bit later in the show. I was talking a little bit about the bailouts of the auto industry. We're talking about socializing, nationalizing industry and so forth. And I was arguing that the kind of the bailout of GM is not really equivalent to nationalizing the auto industry, et cetera, and the sort of the argument against what Trucker Tom was suggesting. And during the course of that conversation, I put out deliberately a fake fact, something that wasn't true, and I knew it wasn't true at the time. And I wanted to see if anybody would catch it. And I didn't really give, you know, anything in the show that said, you know, oh, there's something fake here, you know, gotta find it. Instead, I put it in the description of the show, the text description that appears. And I don't know how many people read those text descriptions. I know I do. When I'm listening to other people's shows, I do kind of scan that and see what's in the show. And offered a prize to anybody who found the fake fact. And not surprisingly, and I guess say not surprisingly, because I didn't expect anybody to actually find the fake fact. And nobody did. And I think there's an important point to be made here that there's a lot of people in this world who tend to just kind of take for granted the things that they're told, and they don't challenge the ideas that they're exposed to. Yeah, they'll listen to a show that they perhaps like, you know, whether it's this show or Chris Reardon or Rush Limbaugh or Al Franken or whoever. And they don't really challenge what they're hearing. They don't think, well, God, you know, is what this person's saying true? they take it for granted that this person who they're listening to is somebody who they're drawn to their idea. They're just kind of assuming that, that what they say is well-researched, that it's well-founded in fact. There's an inherent bias in the choice that they make that means that they believe this person entirely, whether this person is actually telling them the truth or not. I think that that is an unhealthy trend in the way people kind of accept what they're given in the media. They don't have the intellectual curiosity or the motivation to check things out for themselves. And the fake fact that I brought up, and I'll just tell you what it is now. During the course of the conversation, I was talking about the Chrysler bailout, and I said that it occurred in the 80s under Ronald Reagan. And that's not true. That's actually, it did take place in the late 70s. Under Jimmy Carter. So, I mean, I was only, a year off or 2 years off. And so people thinking back, I'd say, it was kind of around that time, wasn't it? But it specifically wasn't true. And I wanted to see who would catch it, if anybody, and nobody did. And I think that there's a point to be made, like I said. I think that the point is, you shouldn't believe everything you're told. You shouldn't accept everything at face value, even if it's coming from me. Now, I said right up front in the description of the show, there's a fake fact here. But most people who do perpetuate some sort of a falsehood aren't going to tell you that they're perpetuating a falsehood. It requires a level of discernment. And in order to be able to discern something that's true from something that's not true, you need to be aware of what is true. In other words, you need to pay attention to what's going on around you. You need to educate yourself. You need to read books. Young gentleman of my acquaintance is a very smart lad. Very, very savvy. And he's got some good sense. I think he's got a pretty good head on his shoulder overall. But he has said a couple of times that he doesn't read books. And I find that alarming. Because if you don't educate yourself, if you don't acquire knowledge for yourself, how are you going to know when people are leading you down the garden path? How are you going to know when you're being manipulated? There's been a lot of manipulation in the government in the last 10 years. This is whipping up of fear and this sort of drumbeat towards war in Iraq and a lot of people jumping on the bandwagon because the government has made them terrified. Telling people that there were weapons of mass destruction, even though the government's information showed that that wasn't true. In the 70s, in the 60s, there was the same thing. They're whipping up people in this frenzy, fear of communism, fear of things that really weren't any threat to us, but were portrayed as being this deadly threat to get people thinking in a certain way. Propaganda. And I think that these are things that unfortunately, people aren't going to learn. People need this pointed out to them. And I think that's one of my jobs is to point things out and say, look, you need to pay attention because there's people out there whose motivations are not pure. They want to take advantage of you and manipulate you for their own political purpose or their own social purpose. Religion does this all the time. In fact, I would say religion is based on this idea. And it's interesting how few people come out of that, how few people can see past the BS. And this is something that we've talked about quite a bit on the show, actually, because of talking about conspiracy theories. We're talking about this. Now, I've talked about the echo chamber of faith, and I've talked about the echo chamber of doubt, and you have the connection here with the conspiracy theorists. And once again, this ties right in with what I was saying about conspiracy theorists. They put forward certain arguments that may seem plausible on the surface, until you actually look at what they're saying, look at what evidence there is. And they're counting on you not checking on their facts. And you find most of the time the facts that they're providing aren't facts at all. They're just made up hooey. And that doesn't matter whether it's, the conspiracy theorists. It doesn't matter if it's religion. It doesn't matter whether it's, you know, hippies, psychics. And that's the point of this show. The point of the show is to point out where you're being misled. And also, you know, to encourage people to actually learn for themselves, to actually become aware of the world around them, as opposed to being a passive, manipulated observer of what's going on around them. And I think that the first thing that people need to do is to shut off the damn TV and start reading books and start reading magazines that are scholarly in nature, as opposed to, you know, People magazine or whatever, which is fine for entertainment and fluff, if you want entertainment or fluff. And everyone does. I happen to read comic books. Not very many. But I think it's sad. I think it's unfortunate that there is such a lack of intellectual curiosity, and that people are so willing to be dragged along. And I don't think that people should take anything that anyone says at face value. I think that a well-grounded skepticism is in order, but not skepticism for the purpose of being skeptical. I mean, that's just being a contrarian, just kind of doubting everything that you're told. That's not healthy either. That's what leads to things like conspiracy theories. So you need to strike a balance between credulity, you know, believing what you're told, because obviously there are people out there who are qualified to talk about certain subjects, and you should actually be able to listen to them and have some idea that they know what they're talking about. But, you know, you should still doubt them enough that you go and read about it yourself if it interests you. And I don't understand the people who don't take an interest in the world around them. I happen to think that the world is a fascinating and wonderful place. This is one of the reasons why I love travel so much. And I don't get, you know, why people would kind of shut themselves off in their own little compartment. And, you know, their entire world consists of, you know, their own immediate family and going to the Walmart and going to McDonald's and watching TV all night and going to work during the day. And I don't understand that. I understand it with younger people. I understand it, the gentleman I was talking about earlier, you know, because he's got the apathy of youth. Youth are generally very self-absorbed, and you know, they're going through this time of change in their life, and they're kind of trying to determine what direction they're going. So I can kind of understand that. I do see, though, you know, some people are, some young people especially, are just too apathetic. They just don't care about the world around them. It's really sort of focused inward. I think it's normal to some extent. I don't like it, but there's really not a lot I can do about it, is there? Just kind of hope that they wake up and smell the coffee. But I'm fascinated with the world around me, and I kind of maybe have trouble understanding when other people aren't. Anyway, the email address for the show, if you'd like to participate in this discussion or any other discussion. And I don't care. I mean, you can go back to, you know, my very first episode or whatever and talk about stuff I've talked about. I don't mind that. The email address of the show is tom@tomharrisusa.com. And I have an audio comment here from Scott, and so take it away, Scott.
Okay, Tom, I wanted to make some comments on your podcast and my comments to sort of answer things that you're bringing up. As far as my being a middle grounder for the sake of being a middle grounder, of course not, any more than I think you choose your political position based on your identity. You know, a lot of people choose it on their emotions, and they don't even realize it. But ideally, wouldn't you choose your point of view based upon your true beliefs and what made sense? And that's what I try to do. I just find that I'm usually pushed to the center if I explore something long enough and great enough. If I get into a debate with somebody on it where I think I'm all one-sided, and they can bring things up that end up swaying me to the middle. And over a lifetime, I've found that a lot of that has happened because I try to be open-minded to other people's opinions. You brought up cases that you thought were clear-cut, and there might appear to be some of these in the world, but you took torture, for instance, so I'll take that. So what you would say, because I'm sure this is your position, torture is never right for any reason, any time, any place, no matter what, period. To my point, if you had somebody who was, let's say, Saddam Hussein, or somebody of his caliber who's done plenty of torturing, and you had him in your power, and you knew that he had set something in motion that was ominous, that was going to kill a whole bunch of innocent people, and he wasn't going to tell. And he'd tortured plenty of people himself. He was just this heinous individual. You wouldn't torture him to get that information. I probably would. In that case, it's kind of like a case of an eye for an eye and tooth for tooth, as outlaid in the Bible, but I know you're not into the Bible. But in a case like that, I guess that would be where I might be middle ground on that issue. For the most part, I'm over on your side, though. I mean, that's a pretty impractical, implausible, and unlikely scenario. So for the most part, I'm probably really on your side of the fence on that one. I'm not always completely middle ground. I often have leanings, and on this issue, I think my leanings are way over to the side of torture is almost never right. But there are some exceptions that I can imagine in if there were extreme cases like I just mentioned that were to come up. I can't say always or never on certain things.
All right, well, thank you, Scott. Now, I did cut this comment in half. This comment was actually about a couple of different topics in addition to the torture thing. But I want to address the torture thing specifically because I don't think that it's obviously linked to the other topics that were in this comment. And he was talking a little bit about abortion and he was talking a little bit about euthanasia. And I've talked about those on the show before, but I'm going to come back to that, Scott. Maybe next time I'll talk about that a little bit. Because I've made my position on the pro-life thing pretty clear. And I don't mind getting into a little bit more detail on that if people want to hear it. But I wanted to address torture specifically because this was the kind of what I had talked about a little bit. And you give the example of getting a high-value prisoner like a Saddam Hussein. Now, the first thing that I, as a humanist, take right out of the equation from the very beginning is the justification for torture. Well, he's tortured people, too. He's a terrible person, and he's tortured all kinds of people, too. That comes down to this idea that, you know, two wrongs don't make a right. Just because this guy is a bad guy doesn't mean that you have to stoop to his level. And it's very tempting, I can imagine, and this is a temptation I think that the previous administration fell into quite a bit, was this whole idea of revenge. They weren't necessarily interested in justice, they were interested in revenge. This was a strong emotional response. They wanted this whole eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth thing. Now, if you want to approach it from the biblical perspective, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth is an Old Testament idea. And if you're familiar with the New Testament, you'll know that Jesus actually said, eye for an eye for tooth is not the way to go. It says right here in Matthew 5, verses 38 through 40, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I tell you not to resist an evil person. But whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. So from a Christian standpoint, that's not even a good justification. So even from a religious standpoint, that doesn't work. The thing is, and I think that you kind of pegged me on this one, is that you're right. Torture is never justified. And the reason why it's never justified is because there's never a situation where the only option is torture. Not even if we had Saddam Hussein. Not even if we had Osama bin Laden. Now, you can imagine in your head, in your imagination, come up with some justification, some outlandish scenario where torture would be the only option and therefore justified. But that doesn't happen in the real world. You are making a series of assumptions. I say you, I don't mean you specifically, I mean you generally. You have to make a series of assumptions when you are dealing with a situation like this. First of all, you have to assume that this person who you have in your custody does know about things because you can't know that. You're looking at it as a matter of hindsight, I think, at this point. And you say, well, he might have plans in the works, because you don't know that. That's why you're interrogating the guy to begin with. So you don't know that he has plans in the works. And even if you did, is torture really the way to go? Now, one thing that can be said for torturing people is that it might get an answer faster. But it doesn't mean that you're going to get the right answer. Somebody might tell you what they think you want to hear just to get the torture to stop, but that doesn't mean that they're actually giving you real information about a real situation. They're just trying to get the pain to stop. And one of the excuses that people have used to justify torture is, well, the person provided actionable information. And that phrase is essentially meaningless, because all that means is that they gave the name of somebody who actually exists, or they sent them to a place that actually exists, somewhere that you can check out. You can take action. That doesn't necessarily mean that there was somebody there who was carrying out a plot. It doesn't mean that the information that you got was useful in any way. It just means that they gave you a name to check out. And I think that it's real important that when you hear people who are justifying torture, they say, well, they provided actionable information. They actually say, well, what information did they offer? And, of course, the answer you're going to get 99 times out of 100 is, well, we can't tell you that. And then you ask, well, did that information pan out? Did it? Yeah. Well, we can't tell you that. So I have a feeling that a lot of the time, if not all the time, when you torture somebody, you're not going to get something of real value. And it's not just, you know, obviously, it's not just liberals who think that. I mean, there's certainly had John McCain, who was tortured, refused to give up any kind of information, but he told them what the hell they wanted to hear to make them stop. You know, and it's kind of sad that he later turned around and started justifying torture, but that's politics, and that's a completely different subject. So yes, you've characterized my stance on torture pretty succinctly, and that is that I do feel that torture is wrong in all cases, in any circumstance. It's never justified. But yet there's people that go to great lengths to justify it. And I think in particular the practice of waterboarding. Now, there was a lot of debate going back and forth about whether waterboarding was torture or not. The answer was given to us in the 1940s. Waterboarding is torture. We prosecuted people for waterboarding our troops as war criminals. And rightfully so. It was torture. Yet it's amazing how the Bush administration just, you know, when they did it, somehow it's not torture, but when the Japanese did it during World War II, it was torture. You know, the double standard there was appalling. And the apologists for the Bush administration, they would downplay this. Oh, well, you know, it's like fraternity pranks. You know, yeah, that doesn't sound so harsh, does it? You know, but not one of these people would actually have it done to themselves. And, you know, there have been a couple of instances of people who have said, okay, well, I think it was Sean Hannity, said that he was going to be waterboarded for charity. Never happened. But one person who actually was sort of a defender of waterboarding and who did undergo it was a radio talk show host from Chicago, a guy called Mancow Mueller. And a lot of people have heard of him. He's kind of a, you know, sort of a libertarian right-wing sort of talk show host. I don't know if his show's on anymore. But Mancow agreed to be waterboarded for the purposes of the show to show that he could bear it, that waterboarding wasn't torture after all. And he came out of that experience 180 degrees away from his original opinion. After having had it done to him, he said, this is definitely torture. And he opposes it now. Because he actually went through it. It's real easy to justify torture when you're not the one being tortured. Anyhow, I'm out of time. Thanks for listening. As always, the email address, if you'd like to participate in the discussion, is tom@tomharrisusa.com. And don't forget that the live show will be starting on Saturday, April 24th at 10 a.m. Chicago time, that'd be 11 a.m. New York time, and 4 to 5 p.m. in the U.K. You'll be able to go listen at unitedkingdomradio.co.uk, click on the Listen Live button, and if you want to participate in the show, call in. I hope a lot of people do. The Skype address is United Kingdom Radio. So thanks for listening. This is Tom in a beautiful Chicago, Illinois, signing off. We'll see you next time.